Hello friends, I'm your host Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast.
Poppy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you doing? Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm just glad. I think I managed to suss the technology without screwing it up.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, so I can't remember. I think it was someone shared one of your videos on, I think I saw it on Twitter, and you seem to be asking all the questions that should be being asked, but I guess speech is being stifled a lot in this area.
Yeah.
And then and friends at home, we're going to come on and talk about the thing. You know what I mean when I say the thing. We're going to talk about that towards the end of this podcast, in case some of it needs editing for the various platforms that we're on. But it's not just about the thing, Poppy. It's about health in general well-being. And like I said, this, you know, you get to middle age and suddenly you're starting to learn all those things that would have been kind of helpful if we were taught at school, would it not?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think for me, going through this journey, I mean, I've been through this huge healing journey where I found the power of holistic medicine. The more I learn, the more I realize just how little we actually know in Western medicine about being well, about health, and about this idea of healing as well.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, I'm just checking my technology there. So tell us a bit about your journey, because you've traveled a bit, and I'm fascinated to hear you said in your notes that you had a spiritual awakening.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Poppy. I am a registered nurse and I've been nursing for the last 9 years. So I started off my career in emergency and acute medicine. And then in 2019, I moved over to the Caribbean and I worked as a practice nurse for 3 years. I actually got fired from my position out there because of COVID politics. And I ended up moving back to this country in 2022. And during that time, after getting fired from my position, I also went through a very heavy bereavement. I went through this huge healing journey. And as part of that, I discovered the power of holistic medicine and holistic healing. So moving back to the UK in 2022, my future in the NHS was uncertain. And also I was quite heartbroken over what I'd kind of gone through. So I really delved into this idea of holistic health, and I really wanted to set up on my own and just do something that aligned with my values and my beliefs. So that's why I'm sat here today in my uniform as mindful nurse. So I've now got my own holistic nursing business where I take a holistic approach to chronic disease. So rather than just looking at the physical aspects of disease, which is what we do in the NHS, I look at the mind, body, spirit connection and the person as a whole. So as part of that, I do spiritual counselling, health and wellbeing coaching, and I do Reiki energy healing as well.
And can you describe for us, when you say an awakening, what, kind of in what form or how did that hit you?
Yeah, of course. So my spiritual awakening, it kind of has quite a lot of layers to it. So this all happened right before I'm about to turn 30. So throughout all of my 20s, you know, I've had a really good life. I've backpacked, I've traveled the world. But I was on a very destructive hedonistic pathway. I had issues with alcohol abuse, so really struggling with alcohol issues. And just living on a very sort of physical plane, not connecting to my mind, not connecting to my soul. So in 2021, I went through a series of traumas. And as a result of that, I went through this great deal of suffering and pain. And as someone who had become expert at escaping my emotions through the use of alcohol, for the first time in my life, I had to sit. I was trapped on this island in the Caribbean, could be worse. But I had to sit with this pain that I was going through. And as I was going through that sort of healing journey, I started to connect on a spiritual level. So when I was really suffering, I was looking for a way to ease my pain. And I started meditating. And when I started meditating, I firstly found that I had peace from, you know, the pain that I was experiencing in everyday life. But as I started meditating, I connected to my soul, to my higher self. And I started to have all of these profound realizations about the world, about me as a person, about life, about society, you know, about what happens when we die and where we go after we die. So all of these questions that I'd never been able to sort of comprehend before this experience, I was asking so many questions. And as part of that, I had this huge identity crisis because I thought, I have got no idea who I am, you know. And I started looking at my life thinking, what am I actually doing? Well, I was having a great time traveling the world, but really I was just getting drunk and partying. So I had no real value or purpose to my life. So I started to ask myself all these questions like, how do I want to be remembered when I'm gone? You know, what impact do I want to have on the world? And so my mind's just going crazy with all of these questions. So as part of that, I had this huge spiritual awakening. I woke up on a conscious level. So I became conscious of my own thoughts and the way my mind works. I became conscious about the way society works and about the system I've been working in. And then also I started to become aware of, you know, what happens after life as well, because I went through this bereavement.
And did you come to any conclusions there, or did you get any sort of downloads?
Is that with life after death?
Yeah. I mean, I'm...
Yeah, so this is really interesting. So when I was overseas, I was actually looking after... I was in the Cayman Islands for 3 years. I was looking after my grandmother who had cancer. So we went through this really intimate cancer journey where we were on the receiving end of conventional medicine. And as a nurse who's been with hundreds of patients during their last days, you know, I've held hands of people as they've taken their last breaths, I'd never really given it that much thought. I'd always open the window to allow the soul to go out as I'd been taught, but I'd never really given it that much thought. But when my grandmother passed away, after she went, I was desperate to find out where she had gone. You know, was she okay? So I started actively searching for signs from her. Like for months, I was like walking down the corridor, trying to look in the mirror to see if I could catch her reflection. Like any kind of sign, I was actively looking. And then after about 3 months, I started to get really intense sort of visitation dreams where I'd feel like she was coming to me during, you know, during the nighttime. And slowly but surely, I mean, this is completely my own experience, but my grandmother started to come through for me, and she was showing me physical signs, like from the other side, that she was there and that she was okay. And I'd never experienced anything like that in my life before. So then I knew, I was like, now I know that there's something after this life. And this is kind of why I've gone on this crazy spiritual path, because it was so intense, the things that were happening to me, the synchronicities, the signs, the messages. It's been, yeah, absolutely crazy. But so to answer your question, no, I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. But I do believe that when we pass over, there's something after life that we just don't know.
Yes, interesting one. I was trying to explain to my son about death, especially as we've experienced a family. And I've always said to him, you know, you can't go anywhere. You'll just change form. This form will change. And then you'll become other beautiful parts of life. It might be a bit of a bird flying overhead, or, you know, a drop in the river, etc., etc. One time we were outside and we were laying some concrete together, and he was only, I mean, God, he can't have been more than, I think, 5 or 6. And this leaf blew over the concrete we were laying, and he said, "Oh, look, Daddy, there goes Granddad."
Oh, so lovely.
Yeah, and I've always tried to just nurture that in him. You know, we're all part of the Great Spirit. We'll probably, sadly, we'll challengingly be here forever.
But I think it's nice.
Well, it's just I just think it's a nicer way of framing it than the kind of, you know, the black funerals and the finality.
Oh, yeah. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I feel like death in this country is such a taboo subject. And, you know, you look at other countries like Vietnam or, you know, Mexico, the Day of the Dead, where they really celebrate the life of people and they've got all these lovely traditions. And like you say, in this country, when someone dies, we all wear black to their funeral, and it's very morbid and it's very depressing, when maybe we should actually be celebrating life. But what I find from my experience as a nurse is, you know, deaf is such a taboo subject. And when people are diagnosed with a illness that, you know, threatens their mortality, they kind of go through this massive grieving process because we don't talk about it and it's so taboo. You know, then they start to have these questions like, well, you know, what's going to happen when I die? Where am I going to go? Have I lived the life I want to live? And I think that's why it's important that we do start having these conversations about death.
Yes, and also alcohol. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So many people now that I know just have given up drinking.
I think it's the new thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and let's hope so. Someone once said to me, I asked them why they didn't drink, and they said, well, if you add up all the hangover, depression and the anxiety and the days you miss off work or simply miss off your life, you know, your whole weekend's wiped out.
Yeah.
He said, then you, if there's 52 weeks in a year, you're kind of losing half of them.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you're wondering, why is my life not, you know, why have I not got this dream life that I aspire to? So that really hit home. How have you found your journey?
It's been absolutely crazy. So I've got a strong alcoholic gene in my family, and I've struggled with alcoholism from a very young age. So from a young age, I learned very quickly that I could use alcohol to suppress my emotions. And then as I went into my teens, I started to get quite socially anxious. So I started to use it as a crutch in sort of social situations. And then throughout my 20s, like, I just was a chronic social binge drinker. I loved getting drunk so much. And before I went through this kind of awakening and realizations, I always just thought I enjoyed a drink. But on reflection, I've given up drinking now. I'm over 2 years sober. I actually gave up my 30th birthday as a gift to myself. You know, I've realized that I was using it as a form of escapism because I was so uncomfortable being me, because I had, you know, no confidence. I had no idea who I was. And I was really using it as a form of escapism. But yeah, towards the end of my 20s, the social binge drinking got really quite out of hand, and I had to have a word with myself. And so I made the decision to give up, which was one of the hardest decisions I've ever made. But do you know what? It's been the best decision that I've ever made, because within 2 years, I've gone from being unemployed and being kicked out of the Caribbean and coming back and living home with dad, to setting up my own business and finishing a master's degree and doing all of these things I would never, ever have been able to have done with alcohol in my life.
Yes, you don't hear many people who've given up drinking say that they regret it.
No.
There's also this kind of thing that people think if they give up drinking, then all their friends are going to be like, whoa, what have you done? And, you know, and like, I've never, you know, I never experienced that. I find most people are like quite impressed and quite supportive. And if they're not, I guess the question is, are they really your friend?
Yeah, that's it. Do you find that it triggers people though sometimes when you say you're not drinking? Sometimes it makes people feel a bit on edge if you're not drinking and they are.
Yes, people get unnecessarily defensive, don't they? And I say, listen, I'm not talking about your life. I'm talking about my life. And if you want me to have that pint, well, give my girlfriend a call, run it by her that I haven't had a drink for 6 months or whatever the case may be, because I've never made that decision to stop.
Yeah.
But I've made many decisions just to go for long, long periods without it. And just like you say, they're unbelievable periods. You get so much done. You feel so much better about yourself and life. And you get so much more time to do those things that you really, really want to do. So I always put it back at the person and say, yeah, call my girlfriend. And she says it's okay. I mean, she wouldn't have a problem with it, but do you know what I mean? I'm putting it back at them.
Yeah, absolutely. But actually, when you look at society, when you go sober, you start to really realize this, that as a society, we drink so much alcohol that we don't actually know how to be adults without a drink in our hand. And we've been taught that behavior from childhood. I don't know about you, but when I was younger, I always thought that like a mum and a dad would sit on the sofa This might be a reflection on my parents, but, you know, having a bottle of wine, and that was sophisticated. And then I went to university, and Freshers Week is a week-long piss-up, which is arranged by the university to get all the students drunk as an icebreaker. It's pushed on us, like, everywhere you go. And now I've been getting super into sort of holistic health and health and well-being. I'm actually looking at the negative impacts of alcohol, and it's listed as a grade one carcinogen. Like, it actually can cause cancer, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah. And it's not just the physical damage and the time that it can cost you. It's also in your relationships, because it affects you. It affects your mood. It affects your outlook on life. So you could be... Yeah, when you're in a family, there really isn't any room for problematic drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, gosh. So I have to ask you, how was the Cayman Islands? That sounds quite exotic.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. Do you know what? We had such a good time. I was there for 3 years, and my grandmother actually lived out there for 40-odd years. So she was part of the furniture. It was the best time of my life, and it was the hardest time of my life, because obviously I went through all of, you know, those hard experiences. But yeah, a beautiful island, only 65,000 people. It's completely flat. But the great thing was, I was there during lockdown, and they completely locked the whole island down. So we were all locked in, living in this little paradise bubble. We lived COVID free pretty much the duration of the time that, you know, the whole world was having the pandemic. So I actually didn't see a single COVID patient until 2022, when I moved back to this country.
Yes.
Which was...
Yes, there's a lot of... We'll maybe save it for the...
Yeah, sure.
Save it for the end. So when your clients are coming to you, what typically are the issues?
Yeah, I've had a real range. So it's been really hard, because setting out, I know they say you should have a specific target audience, but I really want to help people with chronic disease, because at the moment, the way we're dealing with chronic disease in this country, it's a very physical approach. It's very much just symptom management and suppressing symptoms with medication. So I want to help people with chronic disease. I've had a lot of people actually come to me with alcohol issues. So I've been helping them, coaching them with alcohol issues. I've had clients with cancer. I've had clients with chronic pain conditions and fibromyalgia. So it's really kind of a mix. And it's not just, it's men and women. So it's a real mix. But I'm very much at the start of my journey. I only launched Mindfulness in September. So, you know, as you know, when you start business, it's a very slow uptake. So I've been doing a lot of free workshops, a lot of free talks, because ultimately I'm just really passionate about getting the word out about holistic health and holistic medicine.
Do you think, I kind of work on this premise that everything you've been taught in life is a lie, and that's, you know, then you can start unpicking it all?
Yeah.
And I just think, gosh, we're quite deluded as a society as to what constitutes good health.
Oh yeah, it's insane.
I mean, people seem to think you can eat whatever you want and there's no consequence of it.
Yeah.
Whereas my sort of viewpoint's always been, well, your body's made up of trillions of cells, and they have requirements, just the same as when you drive your car. Your car has requirements. You've got to put the right fuel in the tank. You've got to service it regularly. You've got to, you know, exercise your car, et cetera, et cetera. And when it comes to humans, when you go to a doctor and you've got a health issue, they don't care about any of that stuff. They're just like, right, what can I prescribe you, or what operation do you want me to put you down for?
Yeah.
Do you think that's a blocker that...
Oh my goodness. Do you know what? The more I learn, the more I realise how much I didn't know. And obviously I've been in medicine for 9 years. So I've got a master's degree in nursing, and I'll just give you one example. So I've been learning so much about nutrition and the gut microbiome, and it's linked to like health and mental health. And in my 9 years as a nurse, I've never received any educational training about nutrition. So that just kind of says it all. And when you see the diet that we're, you know, feeding people in hospitals, you know, it's got to the point now where patients are actually ordering takeaway to their hospital bed. I went into work the other day and there was this patient. He was bedbound, completely furious because he'd ordered a McDonald's the night before. And when it arrived, his McFlurry had melted. And I'm just looking and I'm thinking, you know, the more you learn about health and well-being, the more you realise how chronically sick our country actually is.
Yes, people are very, what's the word? They're very precious about their habits, aren't they?
Yeah.
I was talking to someone the other day, so it was a grandchild of my friend had to go to the hospital to have all the roots of their baby teeth taken out. And I know the grandma's quite, you know, she's a nurse herself, and I'm like, what happened? They said, well, it's when they go to the other grandparents, they just shove like 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola and fizzy and Fanta. They don't have any understanding of the amount of sugar that's in that, you know, sugar and caffeine, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, she was like, you just can't talk sense into them.
No. It's very, very difficult. And I think one of the hardest realizations that I've had to come to terms with on this journey is that not everybody wants to heal, not everybody wants to help themselves. And actually understanding and coming to the point where you realize that you are in complete control of your life and you are the one that has to make the changes, that's really, really difficult for some people. And so the hardest thing with this work is realizing actually some people don't want to change and some people are happy living their life the way that they are. But you're absolutely right. When you see how unconsciously, you know, we're consuming caffeine and sugar, you can almost actually see why we've got these chronic problems in this country.
Yeah, it's almost become our right to drink a bucket of coffee in the morning and not, yeah. There's no, I'm very reflective, you know, I've been in the South American jungle and I've seen coffee growing and it's a poisonous little red bean. It's probably like the last thing you'd want to put in your body in the natural environment. And yet when you dress it up as a Starbucks, we detach from the reality. What are the sort of sticking points then that you have to help people get over and how?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic question. Thank you. So one of the biggest things about working who have chronic disease is to start them on their healing journey, is to guide them to this stage of acceptance, because people have got such bad relationships with their own body. And when they're in a body that's diseased, they are angry at their body, they're mad at their body. So one of the biggest parts about the work that I do is actually healing the relationship with, you know, with their body, about helping them treat themselves with some self-compassion and some self-love. Because what I say to my clients is, if someone wakes up every single day and they hate the body that they're in, and they look at their body and they've got this negative energy towards it, what sort of life do you think that person is going to live? So it's just getting them to slowly start treating themselves with some self-love and some self-compassion. And once they get to that stage of acceptance, that they can accept that they've got this illness or disease, then we can move forward and actually start doing some of the healing work. And I do spiritual counseling, so I do a lot of trauma healing. There's a lot of research now to suggest that trauma is linked to disease. And these are all things that we don't talk about in conventional medicine. And it's really fascinating, because when you actually start to talk to people who have got chronic disease in their body, most of them have been through quite significant trauma. And in this country, I don't know if it's the whole stiff upper lip thing, we're very good at suppressing our emotions and pushing them down. And I think that's starting to become really apparent now. When you speak to people and you actually realize what people have been through in their lives, you can almost see, okay, I understand why you're in this hospital bed in front of me.
Yes. Do you think it's hard for people to take responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very hard. I think that is one of the hardest things in the healing journey, is understanding that you are responsible for your life, for your health, and for what you're doing. And I think a lot of people, this was myself as well, view the world from a state of victim mentality, you know, especially if you've been through trauma in your past. If you're viewing it from this kind of, this happened to me from victimhood, you're going to struggle in life. So one of the things that I like to do with my clients is try and teach gratitude. So even if you have been through something quite traumatic, try and find good things in your life. What is good in your life? And you can find small things, even if you have got, you know, even if your life isn't great, you can find the small things. Sleeping in a comfortable bed at night, having sanitation, you know, being able to have access to drinking water. As you know, because I know that you've traveled the world, when you go to third world countries and you see the way they live, you realize just how privileged we are in this country.
Yes, absolutely. I remember working in Mozambique, which was the third poorest country in the world. I was visiting, out walking with one of the lads that I taught at street children's school. We were walking through the village, which is just mud huts. And I can't remember how it came about, but this woman sort of called us over and she sort of motioned to look inside the hut. And there in this smoky darkness, toddler. And I don't even know if I can say this, but it's almost like the toddler's face was coming off. It was awful. And yet there was almost such acceptance that that's life here. Illness and death is just a sort of way of life. And I remember I gave this woman some money to take the kid to the doctor because they couldn't afford it. I mean, even just a visit to the doctor was out. They couldn't spare that money. And when I went back, I think they spent the money to go and see her sister or something. I sort of am laughing. That's the problem, isn't it? We have a comfortable standard of living here, but if your mental health isn't right, then it's not comfortable at all. It doesn't matter how you're.
No.
And then also that comfort of living becomes your kind of base, doesn't it? That just becomes what you expect. And yeah. It's kind of, I think the thing about taking responsibility for our health is it starts with gratitude, having this thing called life and appreciating that you're a trillion upon trillion to trillion to trillion to one shot just to be here. I think, would you agree, society sort of like drums that out of us?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just the way that we live. We are so privileged. And I guess unless you go and have those experiences where you can see firsthand how other people do live, you know, if you're living amongst it. And I think we've got this kind of culture now, especially with online, where the, you know, younger kids, they're constantly comparing themselves to other people. And I mean, I think the phones have got a great deal to answer for. You look at the mental health in this country now, and I know a lot of it is stemmed from the lockdowns and things like that, but actually people are consuming so much time on their phones. And that really worries me for the younger generation, because there's so much anxiety in children nowadays. And I don't know about you, but when I was at school, I remember feeling anxious, but I don't even remember hearing the word anxiety. We used to say like, oh, I feel a bit nervous, or I've got butterflies. And now every single person I meet has got a form of anxiety. So we've got to start looking at the way we're living our lives and what's changed. And, you know, obviously food's a big one, but the amount that we're consuming on these screens is insane.
Yes. And I don't think it's going to change because it's all profit driven, isn't it? So that, I guess that would suggest even more so that change has to come from within.
Yeah. Absolutely. And also as well, I think that we've built this society to make people believe that they have to go to the doctor to have a pill to fix their problems. And we've forgotten that the body has its own innate healing mechanisms. You know, you look at anybody who's gone through like a healing journey, or they've healed themselves from their disease, and it does happen. There's loads of people who've healed themselves of cancer. And when you look at how they've done it through kind of going down a holistic route where they've looked at their physical health, they've looked at their mental health. So I think we definitely need to just start raising the awareness that, guys, you don't need to just take a pill to fix everything. It's got to come, some of it has to come from within.
So, Poppy, I want to sort of kick out something positive here for people that are listening that might be struggling. Before we talk about the quote unquote of other elephant in everyone's rooms. I mean, one thing that's really apparent to me, because I get approached a lot by people who have challenged, it's really hard for someone to start making headway whilst they're still or whatever substance it might be. So let's just have a scenario then where, let's say you've got someone there not particularly satisfied in their job, if indeed they've got one, possibly worried about being overweight, starting to get those niggles that will come to you in midlife if you haven't been looking after yourself.
Yeah.
And for the most part, everyone seems to be dealing with some sort of bereavement or loss. What can we say to them? What could be a starting?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of the things that I recommend are completely free. So the biggest thing that I would recommend for anyone listening who's struggling with their health is to take up meditation, because meditation is completely free. You can do it anytime, anywhere, and you only really need to dedicate 5 minutes a day to get the benefits. You can do videos on YouTube, and it takes some time. And I think people often, they give meditation a go once and they think, oh, I have all these thoughts, I can't empty their mind, so they give up. But it's something that takes a little bit of practice and it takes a bit of time. Meditation absolutely transformed my life, and this is a huge part of why I'm here doing this work now. But I use guided meditations with all of my clients. And when you meditate, you can just find some peace away from whatever's going on in your life. If you're struggling with trauma or emotional pain, during that state of meditation, you can just come to a state of peace. And it's a mind, body, spirit practice. So when you're doing it, you're just going to find that you get some clarity. There's so many benefits to meditation. It's free. So that is my biggest recommendation for anyone who wants to just start making some changes. But there's lots of things you can do. You can do cold showers in the morning. You can do breath work. You can do journaling. And all of these things, they're completely free.
Yes. And I suppose a bonus of meditation or just being quiet is you're living in the present, detached from a past that doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
No longer exists, because I think so many people are shackled by...
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I don't know about you, Chris, but until I went through my own trauma and actually allowed myself to experience that pain and I found meditation, I realized that at 29 years old, I had never lived in the present moment. I'd been so caught up in my head from the pain of my past, constantly trying to run away from my past, looking at the future, booking my next trip, getting drunk, that I was just not living in the present moment. And when you actually start to live in the present moment, you start to realize just how beautiful the world really is. And you start to have this real gratitude for, like you say, waking up every day and just being alive.
Yeah, it's almost as if life's traps you into thinking too much.
Yeah. It's a battle against our own minds for everyone, really.
So we can advise people, take some time in the day to be quiet.
Yeah.
I always say the cold shower thing. I say to people, you know, start turning it on cold. You don't have to go full on Wim Hof from day one.
Yeah. And you only need to start with 15 seconds. You don't need to go straight into 2 minutes. Definitely work your way up. But the good thing with the cold showers is if you suffer with anxiety or overthinking, when you get in that cold shower, your mind, that voice is going to say to you, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. It's going to be freezing cold. If you can push past that voice and go, no, I'm doing it, then that's you starting to have some control over your thought. And if you can start practicing that, that's training your thoughts to start controlling them. So it's definitely a good practice. And also the benefits of the cold shower, because it stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system. That's going to give you positive benefits for the rest of the day.
Absolutely. I say to people, make the bed in the morning. Make the bed, win the day. Because
yeah, that's true.
Well, you've just demonstrated to yourself that you're in charge. You've taken action. You can do this. Think a big problem or challenge with mental health, that feeling that life does to you,
yeah,
as opposed to no, we do to life. we got to carve out a paradise here, and it won't, you know, it won't come to you through inactivity.
Absolutely. But the other thing I will say quickly with mental health is we're constantly trying to suppress our mental health. So in the conventional healthcare system, they're going to give you medication to suppress your, you know, the chemicals in your brain. They're trying to suppress it. But I've worked with clients with mental health, and one of the biggest things that's helped them is guiding them to this point where they accept, okay, I have mental health. I have mental health. Now, what can I do to move forward with mental health? But manage it in a manageable way, instead of constantly thinking, I hate my brain, I wish I was different. So doing all of those self-care practices would be really beneficial.
What do we say about exercise, Poppy?
Exercise is your friend. So we are living more sedentary lifestyles than ever before. People are working from home. We're just, you know, we're binge watching Netflix. We've become very sedentary, and movement is medicine. It's so important to just move our bodies and get out. If you're someone who suffers with chronic disease, you know, you may not be able to go and do an hour in the gym, but even if you can get outside in nature and have a walk amongst the trees, just get some fresh air, just start moving. And I know it's really hard, because when you have mental health, sometimes you're stuck in this position where you don't want to leave the house. But if you can push yourself to just get up and have 10 minutes a day of walking, it's really going to start to benefit your mental health.
And what are we saying about diet?
Diet, I mean, Hippocrates, the father of medicine from ancient Greece, 2,500 years ago, was saying that all disease starts in the gut. Let food be thy medicine. We have totally underestimated how much diet is impacting our mental health, our physical health. We've got the gut microbiome, which is linked to our mental health. So if you're eating a poor diet, you're going to feel rubbish. You're going to feel sluggish. I had a chat recently with a nutritionist, and she said, we don't need to overcomplicate it. Just go back to putting as much colour on your plate and go back to healthy, hearty home cooking.
Yes, exactly. So, Poppy, everything you said is easily achievable. In fact, it can be done now, can't it? You haven't told anyone to run a marathon.
No, absolutely not. And all of these things I'm suggesting can be free, because there's a lot of talk, you know, people can't afford to do these things, but it doesn't cost any money to go for a walk. It doesn't cost any money to sit and do a meditation. So if you really want to make positive changes, you can start introducing those things. It's not going to cost a lot of money.
Exactly. Well, friends at home, we'll put Poppy's details below should you wish to make contact with her. If you're struggling, just do it, because it might not be Poppy that changes your life. It might just be the fact that you've taken action. And I always find, Poppy, do you agree that if you take action, the universe just gives you back?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that for sure.
If you sit worrying about stuff, thinking that things are going to change, it just becomes daunting, doesn't it?
It does. But also, if you make the changes and you stick with them, you start to build confidence in yourself. Because if you tell yourself you're going to wake up in the morning and go to the gym and you don't, then you get annoyed with yourself. You lose the faith in yourself. You lose the trust. If you get up in the morning and you go to the gym, you're going to be like, I did it. If you can start doing those little changes every day and following through with what you tell yourself you're going to do, that empowers you, and that actually builds up your confidence.
Yes. I always say to people, keep it, make it easy. I like to think I sort of achieved everything that I want in this lifetime. But it's all been easy. I think people have preconceived ideas. I ran the length of the UK once, and I had ultra marathoners and military people telling me I was crazy and that I'd need to do 10 years of training and have all this specialist masseuse and nutritionalist and I went, no, I just booked a flight to John O'Groats, set my compass south, and then off I went. And it's because everything I do in life, I just want to do it easy. I'm not suggesting everyone does, you know, takes that approach to what potentially could be quite a challenging situation, but it's, you know, we have this thing in our family. We walk around the block in the morning at minimum, you know, or we go for a run. But if you make it, look, I'm going to walk around the block, and then you think, do you know what? No, actually, I'm going to trot today. Then you can decide then. If you get in the shower and say, look, I'm going to put it on a bit cold, maybe not what we call in the military ices, but just a bit. Oh, hang on. No, I'll do it a bit more. A bit, you know, it's easy wins. Putting more vegetables on your plate is just literally like the most simplest thing to do. And then, of course, as you said, Poppy, that I think there's probably a lot of misconception about meditation. But as your title accurately describes, it's just being aware, isn't it? It's being mindful.
Absolutely.
It's being mindful that if we don't just be quiet every once in a while and tune into what we are, which is, I say, the universe, then there's always going to be something trying to play havoc with your mind, something in the future, something you've got to do, some bill you've got to pay, someone that you may or may not have upset, or you're getting depressed because of the past. And I always say, if you think the past exists, folks, try and get an apple from the fruit bowl when you were a kid. just bring me that apple. And you're going to find you can't, because the past only exists in our, you know, in our memory banks. And it only even exists then if we let the program keep running. So, Poppy, really good stuff. Very, I just think it's great that you've let people know that this stuff is easily achievable. It's a requirement. Everyone deserves to have the best life possible. And it's not hard. It just starts with ourselves.
Absolutely.
So let's come on and talk about a bit more of the sort of contentious issue that should be being discussed, but for reasons of algorithms and the like, or should we just say censorship, it's not getting the exposure that it should. I'll just refer to like the nonsense of the last 3 years. That's what I refer to, how I refer to it, and possibly the procedure. And yeah, then maybe we can keep enough of this part of the conversation to keep it on YouTube. But sure. your videos blew up, didn't they? I'm looking at your TikTok now, just show our audience. You've got almost 100,000 views between two videos there. I couldn't find the one that I thought I saw you in. Was it talking about excess deaths?
Yeah, so that was talking about the discussion at Parliament with Andrew Bridgen that actually got taken down off of TikTok. I think it got to about 55,000 views, and then it got taken down for breaching community guidelines. So yeah, you won't find that one on there, unfortunately. It's been removed completely.
Yes. I'm just trying to think how to proceed tentatively. And do you think there's a conversation there that's not being had?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just really important for us to start talking and raising awareness about what is happening in this country. And as a registered nurse who's worked for 9 years, you know, I am really seeing a massive decline in the health of our people. And I don't think that it is just a certain one thing. I think there's lots of factors. We've discussed some of them during the podcast, but we need to start coming together as a community. We need to come together. There's been so much divide since the nonsense that's been going on, and we need to come back together as a community and start talking about what is happening, supporting people. Pete, like, our country is grieving on a mass level, and you know, it's really important that we start having these conversations.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I suppose people come to this kind of knowledge in their own time, but there's an overwhelmingly, there's a lot of people that probably wouldn't understand very much of what you and I have talked about for the last hour, because their life has steered them, you know, on a different path. Let's just say a more mainstream route, where they watch their news, they get their information, they get their health from the GP that only sort of, you know, they're down that. There is a huge conversation here to be had, because with respect to all that kind of thing, like, I wouldn't go anywhere. I wouldn't go anywhere near any of it. Just absolutely. My thing is, I was born perfect, and I believe everybody watching now is the same. I think nature has an answer for all of it. I think the landscape is been so misconstrued and taken advantage of by people that stand to gain in terms of finance and power, that it's a real shame that there can't be more of an open conversation about what constitutes health, what constitutes this, what are the factors that you know, push or make people susceptible. But it's, when you think what's gone on, it's just crazy. And it's almost bizarre that it's like society's willing to move on without addressing what's gone. I know a lot of people probably can't move on because they've suffered, you know, them or someone that they love dearly. But I saw right almost, you know, after the thing started happening, I mean, the procedure, you know, I had someone that I know quite well, really, really, really ill. And it was a popular guy. And I'd see these long sort of Facebook comments, leaving him well wishes and this kind of stuff. And he went from being like your typical, like, macho out there. I won't say what job he did, but it was one of those ones that you'd be like, whoa, blimmin' hell, this guy's hard as nails. And to see how it left him, and then to read these threads, and like, not one single person has kind of picked up on it or suggested it. Or, and I'm not saying, you know, I mean, you sometimes you can actually nail down what has made a you know, what has given people a heart condition or whatever it might be. But I just, I think that a lot, the majority of the public are still really vulnerable in this respect.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think people are vulnerable. And like you say, it's sad that we've got to this point where we're not allowed to really talk about what's happening. It's kind of all being hushed over. I mean, as a registered nurse who's been working in healthcare for 9 years, you know, it's just, I have seen such a drastic change of the health of our people over the last couple of years, but particularly in the last 6 months. It's getting to the point now where it's like, how can we not be talking about this, because people are so sick. And my biggest concern really is just the acute conditions in young people that we didn't really see before. I think that's the most concerning.
It's just criminal. Poppy, I tell you what we'll do. Let's leave that here, because if you've got another 10 minutes perhaps,
yeah,
I want to record a separate piece for our Locals platform.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's completely uncensored on Locals. We've got a great bunch of people over there, and this is the sort of conversation that we should be having. So what I'm going to do is thank you massively.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no. The pleasure's mine, Poppy. And isn't it nice to think that there'll be somebody watching now that will have got something from this?
I really, really hope so. I mean, I've got such a huge passion. I believe that it's my purpose to share the power of holistic medicine. And all I'm doing is trying to plant seeds wherever I go. So thank you for all your listeners. And I really hope that someone's got some benefit. If anyone can take anything away from this conversation to make one small positive change in their life, then, you know, we've done a good job, Chris.
Absolutely. And so have they, because the, you know, big credit to anyone watching now that's going to take action. I did it. I was very, very ill many moons ago now, and I just remember that moment. That was my enlightenment, Poppy, where I went, hang on a sec, only I can change this, can't I? I can blame this, I can blame them, I can wait for this, I can compare myself to this, to that. No, it starts with me. And
absolutely.
And that was a beautiful moment in my... Poppy, we're going to put all your details below. Stay on the line so we can record another piece for Locals. I'm just going to play us out here. Friends at home, if you could like and subscribe, we'd really, really appreciate it. And massive thank you to everyone that supported us on Locals or our Patreon for $1.99 a month, or just simply become a YouTube member. We really couldn't do this without you, so thank you very much. And that's it, Poppy. Thank you again. Stay on the line. I'm going to try and do six things at once. One thing, really, which is just play the credits. So thank you. Much love, everyone.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe, and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.